Hello and welcome into the KE Report. I'm your host, Shad Markowitz, and I'm speaking today with Brian London, editor and publisher of the Gold Newsletter. And Brian, it's always great to get your thoughts on the commodity markets, on the precious metals, and just on the markets in general. We've got a lot of news coming at us from every angle, whether it's geopolitical, fiscal, and monetary. The globe has all kinds of different things gyrating the markets. And I'd like to start off with gold, because we have seen a roller coaster ride where after tagging almost near its all-time high, it was actually its all-time COMEX high last week, gold gave up about $150, $170 and crashed all the way back down when the news was there was some resolution in the Ukraine-Russia tensions. And then after the Fed speaks, now we've had a complete reversal back up by about 40, 50 bucks. So let's start with the roller coaster that is gold. Brian, what do you make of these markets?
Well, it's not unexpected. You know, when gold shot up to those record highs, at least on an intraday level, I was kind of beating the drums and screaming from the highest hills to my readers and anybody that would listen that it be ready for a very significant pullback for really a couple of reasons. You know, historically, we've seen the metals weaken right before the Fed's rate hike as the shorts kind of pile onto the market. But of course, we also had the dominant geopolitical issue driving all the markets, really everything in the whole narrative in the world, in the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And at some point, although it didn't seem so then, at some point that was going to calm down or get some kind of a resolution. And gold was going to have a very significant pullback whenever that happened. It kind of happened as a result of the Ukraine issue. Or some, I guess, consensus building that there was going to be a negotiated settlement at some point, and without Ukraine giving up either total domination by Russia or significantly what Russia was after. So gold settled back as things kind of calmed down, or they were not, if not calming down, becoming more accepted by the market. Now, the other part of that pattern that is very well established was that gold typically rallies and begins a strong and long-lasting rally at the point of the Fed's first rate hike. It's counterintuitive, but it is something that has a demonstrated track record. We predicted it in Gold Newsletter in December of 2015. I think we were the lone voice doing so at the time. And it happened then. It immediately gold jumped about $25 right after the Fed hiked rates for the first time in December of 2015. On December 16th of that month. And that broke the back of the long bear market, and gold rallied for about 7 or 8 months afterwards. It made a lot of money for us back then. And the hope now is that that's going to happen again. So far, we're hours into the first trading session, full trading session post the Fed rate hike. And that pattern is holding, but you know, we've got our fingers crossed. We're knocking on wood. We are very suspicious and wary gold bugs at this point and wondering what could derail it. And frankly, there are a couple of things that could derail it, but so far it looks good.
Well, let's get into what could derail it, because you know, most people were on the camp this time around after seeing it in 2015 in December and also seeing it in 2018. Most people were in the camp that, hey, these Fed rate hikes are probably going to be bullish the precious metals, also with the backdrop that the reason the Fed is hustling to get their tapering done and get these rate hikes started is because of the 7.9% CPI inflation reading. So what could derail it at this point, Brian? Or is there anything that you see as a cautionary note that on the monetary side, I guess I should say?
Yeah, on the monetary side would be inflation not living up to these heightened expectations. I don't think that's going to happen. I thought it was going to happen before the geopolitical issue cropped up, because the comps were going to get harder going back a year on the inflation front, on the CPI. Of course, everything's accelerated, and the question there now is, have expectations been raised so much so that higher inflation, but not quite as high as people are worried about, comes through and kind of temporarily derails the market? I think that is temporary if that happens, but that is one risk. Another risk is if the shorts come in and really try to defend their position. and mount a concerted attack on the gold market. That's a lower risk as well, I think, because historically, I believe gold has rallied on these Fed rate hikes because the shorts kind of abandoned the market at that time. Having bought the rumor of Fed tightening, they kind of back off and sell the news. So that is a risk, not as great as I would think it would be normally. The big risk for gold, of course, is that peace breaks out in Ukraine. We can certainly hope that happens. You know, we'll take the hit in gold if we can have that conflict calm down and there's some resolution in to this terrible crisis. But if that and when that happens, it is going to be temporary, I believe, because the monetary issues are going to regain dominance and are very, very bullish for gold. The Fed's going to hike rates. It can't get very far down that road, even compared to post-2008. Back then, the federal debt was large, but not nearly as large as it is now. And the Fed won't be able to get to where it wants to get on rate hikes. Back then, it wanted to get to 3% on the Fed funds rate. It had to turn back at 2.5% because the markets would not let it get any further. This time, the federal debt alone, I believe, will stop the Fed before it can get to even 2% on the Fed funds rate, because the resulting impact on debt service costs because of the large federal debt today will prevent it from going any further. The cost of servicing the federal debt will rise to $1 trillion or more every year, and I don't think that's going to fly. Of course, well before that, we could see the markets throw a hissy fit and tell the Fed to turn back, which is really what I think will happen before they get too far down that road.
Well, Brian, some of the news that I saw yesterday on Powell's speech mentioned that they want to get the Fed funds rate up to about 1.9%. They want to do about 7 hikes. That's at least what they messaged yesterday. But there is going to be that point where the market cries uncle and where they get pressured by some kind of a tantrum. And in that particular case, that could be a big impetus for gold. But the other thing would be if they just had to finally admit that, hey, we can't really hike these rates much higher or else the crushing debt, you know, the debt payment would be too much. Do you think that they could potentially try yield curve control as another tool in their toolbox?
Yeah, that's the next step. When they are forced to turn back this time, if in fact they are forced to turn back by, you know, some kind of economic calamity or market crash, they are going to have to pull out their toolbox once again, and they're going to have to put some new tools in that toolbox. And I think yield curve control is one of them. Potentially negative rates, negative interest rates on a nominal basis is another tool that has remained untouched so far by the Federal Reserve and could be brought out the next time it happens. So yeah, I think this next big bull run in gold, this bull market in whole, is going to have two stages, at least initially. One is just the tightening process, which has typically led to, like I say, a 7-8 month rally in the metals. I think that's going to happen. But then the next phase of the big bull run is going to be when the Fed is forced to pull back from this tightening, and what that does to the market psyche, to the whole view of the dollar and other fiat currencies, in central banking monetary policy in general. With every cycle, it all loses more and more credibility. So do we have one more cycle before some kind of a big reset monetarily, or is it 2 or 3 more cycles? I don't think anyone really knows, but what we can be confident of is that this next cycle is going to be very bullish for gold, and you know, you need to be positioned.
Well, it does seem like each of the Fed rate hiking cycles get more and more shallow, they get shorter in duration, and they achieve less and less levity with the hikes. So there's going to be a point where the generalist investors that haven't really paid attention to the precious metal sector, you know, there's still a very small allocation in most people's portfolio, if at all. Do you think that if there is that gotcha moment where people start going, hey, you know, this is the third or fourth rendition of this rate hiking cycle, then back to cuts, then rate hikes, then back to cuts that we've done just in the last two decades. Is there a point where the generalist investor says, hey, I think the Fed is, you know, painted themselves into a corner, and they finally have the light bulb go on, and we get more generalist investors moving capital into the precious metal sector?
Yeah, we do. I think it's a gradual process. I think it's not a dam bursting, but I think we've already seen that process begin, at least with some of the smarter generalist funds, some of the more the deep-pocketed investors out there that are making allocations. We've seen that over the last few months, and that every dip in gold has been bought by apparently some big hands coming in and buying on the dips for gold over and over again, because the corrections have become more and more shallow. So yeah, I think it is a process. It's going to happen more and more. But when does the dollar, when do other fiat currencies, when does central banking monetary policy lose all credibility? I don't think anyone really knows when that's going to happen, at what point it's going to happen. But it's a process, and we're in the process. So more and more generalist investors are going to be moving toward gold and silver as this process plays out, I believe.
Well, it's going to be fascinating to watch, and it's going to be fascinating to see how many hikes they're able to do and just how far this goes along before reversing course. But another thing that has generalist investors looking at the metals is just the backdrop of higher inflation and the crazy moves we've seen in the commodities, not just in the metals, but also in oil and nat gas and in the agricultural commodities, whether it's corn or wheat or soybeans. I mean, there has just been a commodity surge, really, over the last year or so, and it's been spiked because of some of the Russia-Ukraine tension. But there's also a spike in commodities because of inflation, and now there's the potential of lockdowns in China because of another wave of COVID. So do you think, Brian, that this has more investors just looking at the commodity sector when maybe they would have shrugged or maybe snubbed their nose at it a year or two ago? Do you think there's more generalists just looking at commodities in general right now?
Oh yeah, there absolutely are, and for good reasons. You know, I look at the commodity sectors basically having three layers of stories right now, or dynamics at play. One is the fact that we've had many years, even decades, of underinvestment in exploration for a number of commodities or all across the board. And now that's coming up again. Not only are we having restricted supplies and or supply growth, but now it's running headlong into demand curves like nothing we've ever seen because of the whole electrification of transportation mega trend, the battery metals, the metals involved in electric vehicles, et cetera. So that's all coming to a head. That was the underlying story for a while now. Then, of course, we had the pandemic and supply chain disruptions. That's created what many believe are short-term disruptions, but I think are going to be longer-term disruptions as well. We'll have a lot of knock-on effects. Also, the other layer is, of course, the Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And the restrictions that has put on energy and some other base metal supplies, nickel, and it has other implications that I think many are chalking these up to being short term, but they have longer term implications and repercussions because they've daylighted a lot of supply chain risk out there. And governments and countries are going to be reluctant to be exposed to these potential supply chain disruptions, and we'll be moving to secure supplies of a lot of key metals. So we're going to see, I believe, a surge in investment in a number of commodities post-Ukraine in a lot of areas. I think uranium is going to be a prime beneficiary of that, as it's recognized as really the premier green source of energy production for the world.
Well, there's also been discussions between Australia, the United States, Japan, and a few other nations about rare earths. And there's also a list of strategic metals, all kinds of different metals that are just important for industry, important for technology, important for defense, that are on these critical metals lists. And it's probably going to shine a light on, hey, you know, that beleaguered mining sector that everybody's been boycotting, and green environmentalists have been trying to shut down mines or stall them out. I think a lot of the narrative is starting to shift, but I'd like to get your thoughts on it, where if you want these green metals, if you want infrastructure for charging stations for EVs, if you want to just keep having laptops and smartphones, and if you want solar power, and if you want windmills, you're going to need more raw materials. And that shines a light on if you really want the green future and the electrification of the world, you're going to need raw commodities. Do you think that changes the way politicians and lobbyists deal with mining in a domestic sense in different countries?
Well, you would hope, but I wouldn't place too much hope in that. You know, if you look in the U.S., you have domestic politics running smack dab up against these supply shortages, where the U.S. government is now going hat in hand to Saudi Arabia and Venezuela asking for increased oil production while it's trying to clamp down on domestic oil production, you know, at the same time. And you also have the environmental, the EPA shutting down or reverting back from more environmental study, the road to the to Trilogy's projects in Alaska, and delaying that massive copper, gold, and cobalt project for yet another, at least another year in its development. You see a lot of this sort of thing happening, and, you know, domestic politics and international supply chains sometimes aren't running in sync, as we've seen. So I don't really try to not to underestimate the stupidity of politicians. So I don't know that that's going to be a big resolution. But, you know, what happens in that case is the more roadblocks that are being put up for commodity production and for battery metal production means higher prices for those metals. And if you're able to find companies that are exploring in relatively good jurisdictions, then they're going to benefit from that.
Well, when you're looking at companies, I would imagine that everybody looks at jurisdiction, but how heavily do you weight jurisdiction as far as domestic supply in North America, Australia? You know, are you open to Western Africa? What areas do you think are going to get a premium, Brian, because of the demand that's just there globally? But what countries and what particular jurisdictions do you think are going to get more investor attention?
Yeah, it always is project and company specific. And in a lot of regimes, it takes a truly extraordinary project at a good time in its development to overcome country risk or particular geopolitical risk. But right now, you know, it's a big world, and you don't have to invest in some of these regimes. You can always find value elsewhere. Right now, Nevada, Arizona, Canada generally are the jurisdictions you want to be looking at. And not coincidentally, a lot of the companies in our gold newsletter portfolio are focused in those regions. But that said, you know, we do run or recommend companies all over the world depending upon the projects they have and if those projects and the potential justifies the added geopolitical risk.
Well, Brian, I'd love to get your thoughts on maybe any miners you'd like to share that have your attention right now, because as we're seeing the metals prices for gold, silver, copper, really all the commodities on a move higher, margins are expanding for producers, development projects are looking more attractive, and explorers that are finding ounces in the ground are going to be that much more valuable. What area of the miners has your attention right now, and are there any companies in specific that you feel are doing great work and just maybe haven't gotten rewarded yet, haven't been noticed by the market at this point in time?
Yeah, you know, I like a company that we just recommended in Gold Newsletter called Zacapa Resources. It's symbol ZACA on the Venture Exchange. I had actually invested in that company on a private basis and completely forgot that I owned it till I started seeing a little buzz on it. And we recommended it in Gold Newsletter after I noticed that they were getting some good visuals on DrillCore. It's a company that's focused on copper and gold, not projects that are copper and gold, but on copper projects and on gold projects. And those are the two of the areas that I'm most excited about right now. And they have one copper project where they're getting literally 800 to 1,000 meters of drill core that looks good. and looks good enough that they had a report that the visuals look very good. And it's just a stone's throw from the billion-ton resolution deposit in Arizona. And they are interpreting the geology that such that they feel they're on trend with that. But the assays aren't out yet. They think that they're trying to downplay the assays. They're saying that they feel that they're vectoring in on a major porphyry, but they're still at the margins of that. Still, there's a lot of excitement over the upcoming assays. The company's moved about 30% since we recommended it a few weeks ago as they're anticipating these assays. So there is a bit of a drill hole risk there. It could make a really big move if they get great results. But it could come back a bit if they're not up to the market's expectations. The good news is they've got about a half dozen other projects, any one of which looks to be a potential company maker in my eyes. So it's a very well-run company. They've got great projects, and their first project out of the gate is looking very exciting. So I really like Zacapa. As I said, I do own that one. Another one I own that I don't think has gotten its due yet in the market is Trigon Metals. I know we've talked about that before here. It's symbol TM on the Venture Exchange. It's just up a bit since we recommended it a while back in Gold Newsletter, but it's actually going into copper production in a great project in Namibia. Now, that's not Arizona, it's not Nevada, and it's not Canada, but it is a safer area than most people believe, and the project is really extraordinary. They've got 50, 60 years of mine life on this copper project, a previous producer, which means that they'll be able to ramp up production to shorten that mine life and really bring more production to bear. But they're starting to make money from copper production, and they are really underappreciated or flying under the radar right now.
Well, I appreciate you sharing those companies with our audience, Brian. And sounds like you got a little copper in the mix then, as well as the gold. So nice to see, especially copper hit an all-time high just last week, we should note, and it got up over $5 for the first time. So not a bad time to be looking for copper projects, and the world sure needs them. So thank you for sharing both those companies, Brian. I guess as we wrap up, any last thought that you would give to investors that have been on the sideline watching the metal prices go up and down, or maybe watching some of their junior miners not move despite the move in the metals? What advice would you give the beleaguered resource stock investors at this point, Brian?
Well, I think it was my friend Rick Rule who first termed the phrase, you've endured the pain, you know, make sure you're there for the gain. And we have endured the pain. I really believe that this is what we've been waiting for. This is the beginnings of a new, very significant rally in the metals generally, gold and silver more specifically. And even if we do have a setback in the next few weeks, if and when the geopolitical issue calms down, well, that's good news. Don't worry about it. It's good news for the world. And eventually the monetary issues are going to take the fore again for the metals, for the monetary metals of gold and silver. And I would look at any sort of a geopolitical driven setback in the metals as a buying opportunity, because the monetary issues will be the dominant things driving the metals higher over the years to come.
Well, good thoughts, Brian. And we appreciate you sharing your insights with us here at the KE Report. If people like Brian's thoughts and like some of the companies he researches and also his macro views on the market, definitely click on the link below to the Gold Newsletter and check out Brian's services. He does a great job profiling not just the mining sector, but also the macroeconomic sector. So, Brian, always great to have you on the show, and looking forward to checking in with you in a couple weeks to see where things are at then.
Great. Looking forward to it, Chad. Thank you so much.